Yeah, to echo what everyone on this panel said, look, I don't think I'm dismissing any myths here when I concede that every organization that's represented on this panel is underfunded and understaffed. You know, when I came to this issue 15, 20 years ago, I thought Normal was this giant organization that had, dozens and dozens of employees and million-dollar budgets. And that is far from the reality. And when we're talking about SSDP, when we're talking about MAPS, when we're talking about ASA, in all of these cases, we are talking about small organizations that are being run by individuals who are dedicated, that are making very little money, that are working very long hours, that are trying to, and many times, accomplishing major political changes, many shifts in cultural changes, and they're doing it on a shoestring. You know, so I get offended too when you hear this notion that, oh, they're just a bunch of stoners, or how come they haven't accomplished more because they've been around for a bunch of years, and they've got millions of dollars and they've got millions of bodies. No. All of these organizations would welcome you with open arms if you want to volunteer your time or get active or donate. And that's the way many individuals at Normal started. You know, Russ Belleville's a perfect example, who does our outreach now, does our podcasting. He came to the organization and said, look, I'm someone who's interested in getting involved, and this is my skill set, and this is how I think I can help you. Are you interested? And Normal said, yeah, you're damn right we're interested. We don't know how to do a podcast. Sure, come on board. And I think, like I said, I can speak for everybody, all of these other groups, in saying that they would welcome you too. So find what group works best for you and what's your niche. Why does Normal work best for me? You know, I'm going to steal a phrase from my colleague Russ. It's because Normal isn't just anti-prohibition. Normal is pro-pot. And there's a difference, and it's an important difference. And this is really why I think it's ultimately so important. You know, we lost Proposition 19. It was a close vote. We got 46.5% of the vote. But ultimately, we did not win. We did not have a majority of people say, yes, I am going to vote to legalize the personal use and cultivation of marijuana in California. So we did some exit polling to try and find out why. What can we learn going forward? And the most important thing that I personally learned from the exit polling was that when you asked people, and this is people in California now, if they had a positive opinion or a negative opinion of marijuana, a majority of people in California said that they had a negative opinion of marijuana today, okay? Now, when we followed up that question, said, do you have a positive or negative opinion of alcohol? A majority of Californians said they had a positive opinion of alcohol. Now, here's where it really gets interesting. When you follow up and you ask people which substance, alcohol or marijuana, caused greater harm to the individual user, a majority of people said alcohol. They'd be right. When we followed up once again and said, which of these two substances has the greater harm to society, the greater cost to society, once again, a majority of people said alcohol. Now, they're right. They get it. So what can we learn from this? We learn is that people have a visceral negative reaction to marijuana, even today, and they have a visceral positive reaction to alcohol. But when they think through this equation, they recognize that alcohol is the more damaging substance. But that doesn't negate the fact that people's first reaction when they're asked what they think about marijuana is negative. Why do we have this strange duality? We have it because alcohol is marketed. Alcohol companies spend billions of dollars in advertising so that you have a positive opinion of their product. And marketing works. Don't ever let somebody tell you marketing doesn't work. I could have strangled my publisher a couple of years ago when I said, what kind of ad budget do we have to market marijuana safer? They said, well, we don't really think that marketing books and advertising works. Well, maybe your advertising doesn't work, but advertising certainly works. And we see this for alcohol. People initially feel good about alcohol till they really think about alcohol. Americans, or a majority of Americans, are never going to vote in favor of marijuana if you're asking them to vote in favor of something they feel negatively about. So we have to change the image of marijuana. And the way we do that, well, we can take a playbook from the alcohol industry. We need to market marijuana better. Because the only marketing campaign that's gone on for marijuana over the last 5, 6, 7 decades is the federal government's marketing campaign. And that's why I say it's important for Normal to have a role in being pro-pot. Because the alcohol industry has no problems with people being pro-alcohol. I think it was Heineken a few years ago. Their whole marketing campaign was drink life. They didn't feel any need to apologize about the fact they drink. You people drink alcohol and they like it and they have a good time. They didn't feel the need to have a caveat at the end of their advertisement that says, oh, by the way, alcohol can cause all these terrible things too. No, drink life. Think of the Coors ad where people are on the subway and it's a hot day and it stalls and everyone's grumpy and someone pops open the Coors bottle. And then it gets cool and a party starts and everyone has a good time. Alcohol is unabashed about marketing a toxic and deadly product to the masses by saying it's the greatest goddamn product in the world. We know that marijuana can have a positive impact in the world, so it's about time we say so. And not just say we're anti-prohibition, but we're pro-marijuana.
Thank you, Paul. So, to pick up on what Ellen said about, you know, all the wonderful things that this community is going to be able to accomplish once we finally legalized pot, I'm going to share my own gateway theory with you quickly, which is this. Marijuana is the gateway social justice issue. Marijuana is a way that you can very clearly learn that your government lies to you without shame and without facts behind it. And that, you know what, for want of a better word, the system is fucked sometimes. And I was able to learn that as a teenager because I smoked some pot, and then I went to the library, and then I read about it, and then I realized everyone was lying to me about this. And then I asked myself, well, what else am I being lied to about? And that gets into, aside from everything that's important to this issue, when we legalize marijuana, every other social justice cause is going to take heart from that. The same way we can look at that parade and say, my God, I love this event. I love this venue. This is beautiful. But I think the dream is that we have a parade with 1 million people on 420 in San Francisco. And we're going to get there. And this, never let anyone make you feel that this is not an important enough issue for your activism, because it is. And we've heard a lot of the ways that this goes just beyond personal freedom and into the prison system and into our taxes and into our economy. So just don't let people think, oh, you just want to get high. No, I want to get high in a just society where people are treated the way they should be. So we have time for me to put one more question to the panel, but I just want to point out this section is where all of our nonprofits are. They are very, very happy to speak with you about getting involved and about educating yourself and the people around you. So my last question to the panel is, like I said, we're in California right now with a fair bit of freedom, and there are places in the country where, you know, cancer patients are still subject to arrest for a gram. And the question becomes, how do we balance pushing for more freedom in the places that we have some freedom versus pushing for less oppression in the places where we have a lot of oppression? And obviously we have to do both, but how do we balance that, and how do we know which is caused, which is called for?
Well, that's a pretty complicated question, especially for MAPS. But I think a really important way to look at this is to approach it from every angle possible with full force. And so there's a lot of statewide medical marijuana initiatives going on all across the U.S., and that has definitely been a strong way to influence the federal government. And so to keep that up is definitely one way. And as I said before, to identify sympathetic patient populations, this will open up a view for people that is not normally there talking about talking about marijuana to treat post-traumatic stress disorder in vets is on the other side of socks and sandals and tie-dye, which is what people are so used to doing. And so just adamantly, strongly, always suggesting that marijuana could be a very helpful tool in our medical arsenal and to a lot of people that would not normally be using it is just a way to rock somebody's world and to totally change their perspective and their idea of what a stoner is and what marijuana can be used for. So MAPS pushes at the federal level to make that the case, and that's just to make it medical. And maybe prohibition has something to do with that, but medicine is something that the FDA is listening to, and the DEA is on and off on some things. So we're going to keep pushing that way, and I just invite you to all get behind that and to learn about post-traumatic stress disorder and marijuana.
So that actually comes fairly easy to SSDP because we are a chapter-based organization located in different states all around the country. So our chapters are actually autonomous, and they are encouraged to identify and engage in campaigns in their communities, the campaigns that have the most traction. So, for instance, out here in California, we've got our students that are going to be pushing for full legalization out here throughout next year. We've got students in Salt Lake City, Utah, who are looking at pushing a lowest law enforcement priority initiative. So it's sort of identifying what your community needs and working on that. And student-based organizations, the resources aren't really there, but they're able to get this issue on the map in their communities. And so that's what we're really pushing for.
Well, of course, I'm based in California, where most people think it's free. But there's, across the state, it's a patchwork, especially because SB 420 called for locals to be able to pass overages to the state guidelines that were slapped on last minute in a backdoor dirty deal at the state level. And so we'd love to pick our battles, but mostly with our resources, we pretty much have to be in a reactive mode where we come in when things have started. We get the alert that, this county or this city or, Anderson, Shasta Lake, all these places are starting an initiative or a cultivation ordinance or something, and we get involved there. I wanted to say just a quick word about as far as defending the weakest link is, I never forget when I'm at an event like that there's a lot of people who can't be here because they are in prison. They're in jail or they're in prison. We have just put Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer, two medical marijuana activists and patients from Cool California, are now serving 5-year federal prison sentences for growing 100 plants over 3 years, meaning they grew 30 plants a year. And there are still federal prosecutions continuing. And of course, state prosecutions as well. Another way to be an activist is to do court support, to show up in court, not in front waving banners and looking like the stone hippies they think we are, but sitting respectfully in court and just observing. There's a new organization, Stephanie Landa, who was a federal prisoner, started. She's calling it LPOP, Landa Prison Outreach Program. There's some information over there at, I think at the Cannabis Action Network table maybe about that. The Orange County Normal has information about that. They've had some success in local states. Is that Craig? I'll get to you in a second, Craig. Someone has just offered, talking about coming to us with your skills, someone just offered to set up a Twitter account for us for alerts about court dates and things, and they're calling it cannabis. If you write to cannabishotline@gmail.com, you can sign up for that Twitter or the Gmail alert account to find out about when things are happening. Of course, you can visit the canormal.org website as well.
Paul, can you just
Sure. You know, just to wrap up, it's like people said, you got to pick your battles, and you want to pick the ones that are winnable. You know, there's an old saying, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And when we're having this battle, we have to go where we have the resources, where we have a chance to win. You know, you hear this all the time, you know, Normal to say, you know, why isn't Normal investing more resources in Florida? Why are you guys aren't coming to South Carolina? The reality is those aren't winnable right now. And when you have limited resources, you have to prioritize where you spend those resources and where you put those efforts. So we really try, as do all the groups, we try to put our resources in places where we really think we can win. Because you send a tremendous message when you win. Conversely, you send a terrible message when you lose to the public. The other importance is when we win on this issue, for in large part, we maintain our gains. You know, there's 13, 14 states now that have decriminalized marijuana for personal use. Not a single one of those states has ever recriminalized. The sky did not fall in Ohio when they said it's a $100 fine to possess over 3 ounces of marijuana. The sky did not fall in Maine when they said you can possess 2.5 ounces of marijuana and it's a $100 civil violation. The greatest way we show the failure of prohibition is by enacting liberalized marijuana laws and establishing to the public that life simply goes on the way it was before, except we're not spending millions and millions of dollars to target, arrest, incarcerate, and imprison people for growing a plant. That is the message that we send when we win these battles. One other thing I'd like to say, you know, I hear all the time, people say, when's Normal going to come to New York? When's it Pennsylvania's turn? And these are phrases I hear over and over again. Normal is all of you. We don't come to Connecticut and decriminalize marijuana in Connecticut. We were in Connecticut, and our folks on the ground in Connecticut said, this is the year I think we've got a real shot. This is the year if you give us some resources, we'll run with the ball on the ground. That's how it works in a grassroots organization. It all starts with you. And then the final thing I want to say is, you know, Dave mentioned 2 or 3 times the parade that's going on right now on Market Street and on 8th Street and the hundreds of thousands of people that are attending it and how it would be great if we had a similar parade or a march at some point. Here's the lesson. Dave mentioned one lesson we can learn from the parade. Here's the other lesson we can learn. Not all of those people that are marching today in that parade are gay. Many, I would argue a majority of those people are not, but they're marching in solidarity for the rights of the people that are. And if we're going to have the kind of parades and marches we want to have and have the numbers that we think we ought to have to make a difference, we can't just have people who are marching because of their own self-interest. We need to have that solidarity as well. That's something, the other lesson we can learn from what's going on in San Francisco today.